Appreciate you being back this afternoon for our study together. The last time we were together on Sunday night, lesson was the 17th of July, third Sunday, July. We looked at some introductory material to a Between the Testament period. We looked at the Babylonian captivity, the period of time that the Babylonians not only had captured Judah and plundered Jerusalem, but they were the controlling power in that area of the world at that time. The people of Judah were in captivity for 70 years, from 606 to 536 B.C., but really, they came home in several waves. In 539 B.C., the Persian Empire conquered the Babylonians. And after that, I think we see things eased up quite a bit with the going back to Jerusalem and restoring the temple, rebuilding the temple, and then rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. Of course, it was during that time also that many think that and conclude, well, they conclude because I think the name of the king that Esther married, that that she lived during that period and helped to save the Jewish nation from possible annihilation, at least those that were in that area. As we look at the lesson tonight, we go beyond the time of the Babylonian period and the Persian period, and we'll look at a scripture found in the book of Daniel. There's more than one time where Daniel speaks of this dream and shows the interpretation of this dream to of the dream that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had. But between verses 36 and 45, Daniel interprets a dream that the king had, a dream that showed a great image. Back to verse 31, talks about a head of fine gold, and breast and arms of silver, his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet parts of iron and parts of clay. And then in verse 36, Daniel proceeds to tell the king really what this dream has to do, as far as it has to do with the king, various kingdoms and changes in kingdoms of the world as to who is ruling that area of the world. It doesn't mention here other than Nebuchadnezzar being the head of gold down in verse 38. But let's look back at 36. This is a dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of God hath given thee a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Note that Daniel doesn't pull any punches when he's talking to the king. He says, just as the New Testament said, the powers that be are of God. So he tells Nebuchadnezzar right away, this is before Nebuchadnezzar starts eating grass, I think, later. But at this time, he tells him right off the bat that, God, my God is in control. You saw it. Well, he will see it, I think. I don't know the fire furnace has come yet, but that will be made clear. Thou art this head of gold, he goes on to say at the end of 38. We're going to 39. After that shall rise another kingdom inferior to thee. Of course, that would be the kingdom of, that's the part that was silver. A third king, of course, that second king was the Persian, Medo-Persian kingdom. And the third kingdom of brass would be the Greek Empire, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. So speaking there of the Roman Empire, goes on down into verse 44. It speaks of another kingdom. In the days of these kings, that is the days of the iron rule, the kings of Rome, the Roman Empire ruled, and in these days, the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain with hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, and the silver, this is a kingdom that will be far greater than all those kingdoms combined, and the gold, the great God made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And note what he says then. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. He's saying, King, there's no second guessing of my interpretation, and there's no second guessing of this prophecy and what will come to pass. So we have the interpretation of the dream by Nebuchadnezzar. As we go from the Babylonian, and as we go from this dream interpretation to the far past the Babylonian and then the Persian or Medo-Persian Empire, we come next to the Greek Empire. The rise of this third great empire had been predicted, of course, in the book of Daniel. He dreamed about this image that was composed of these four substances, and as time went on, those came to pass. As far as the leaders of the Greek Empire, one was named Philip of Macedon, but probably the one the only one I remember as far as the history books are concerned, even though we did have we did have several classes on it at school of preaching, but was Alexander the Great. As I recall, Alexander the Great, he was the one that, of course, came into control in 332 B.C., and he was the one that gained the control of Palestine under his rule. He died at a very early age, as I recall. And one of the difficulties that he faced in life seemed to be the fact that he had no more kingdoms to overcome. No more. He had risen to the top, and there was nothing else to do. Unless my memory is incorrect, it seems like he committed suicide in his 20s, I believe. Anybody remember that? Anyway, that's what comes to mind just from about 50 years ago when I studied in some kind of history book, world history. The Jews submitted peacefully to the Greeks as they were coming through. Alexander the Great, he came through and he annihilated people and just blew through everything if they didn't. So they really didn't have any choice. They were really helpless when the Greeks invaded. And they were allowed, though, I think as a consequence of that, to maintain their religious autonomy, which existed under Persian rule. The reign was not as strong and not as much problem for them under both the Persian and the Greek rule. Now, after the fall of the Greek Empire, there's a period of uncertainty. And since I'm just giving a brief synopsis of that, I'll just mention three or four things that happened during several hundred years. There was a group of rulers from the family called the, I believe it's pronounced the Ptolemies. P-T-O-L-E-M-I-E-S. I believe I put it in there. The Ptolemies ruled from 323 to 198. And their biggest influence was the use of the Greek language. More and more, the people of Palestine were using the Greek language instead of the Hebrew language. Well, that caused some difficulty because they were speaking Greek, and yet the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. And so in 250 B.C., the Septuagint version of the Old Testament was translated. And the Septuagint was called the 70, LXX, the Roman numeral, Roman numerals for 70. As I recall, because of the, I believe it was a number of men that came together to put that translation together. It became the Bible then of the Jews that were scattered about Palestine, and later, of course, when Christ came on the scene, the first century, those who taught and the believing Jews at that time were using, and the Christians did after that, use this Greek Old Testament. Parchments, for instance, that Paul called for when he wrote to Timothy, 2 Timothy, likely was at least a portion of this Greek, although probably Paul, with the education he had, could read several languages. After the fall of the Greek Empire, there was this period of uncertainty that started out with the Ptolemies, and then following that, a group called the Seleucids. Seleucids. Now, don't nap off on me, because I think probably I napped off a little bit when Jim McGuigan taught this class out in Lubbock, Texas. Because sometimes we say, well, I want to know what happened between the Testaments, but some of it is Greek to me, and some of it is Greek to you. Some of it is, it became more and more Greek too, because the language started that. But anyway, the Seleucids were 198 to 166 BC. That's the dates that are used. Now, a key individual in that had this weird name called Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. That's the way I remember the Irishman teaching our class as he pronounced it. Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. And things turned from bad to worse as far as the Jews were concerned, the people of Palestine. It seems that Antiochus was forced out of Egypt by the oncoming Roman Empire and its hordes, so to speak. And over the next 2 years, he took it out on Palestine. When you get whipped by the big chief, you start finding somebody you can beat up on. So that's what he did. And he really got on people's nerves, I think, more than anybody, because he plundered Jerusalem. He murdered many of the people. He enslaved many more. And he had the audacity. Number one, he stripped the temple of its treasures. And then he sacrificed a pig, a sow, one writer said. He sacrificed this pig on the altar of the temple. Now, that would really take the cake. That would really get the Jews up in arms, so to speak. And the Apocrypha talks about this. There's some reference in it, I'm told. I didn't look them up, although I do have a Bible that has Apocrypha in it. I noticed when I took it out of the box that maybe I picked it up across all those cute ribbons that it had. You know, I preachers like to mark their scriptures That's the first Bible I ever found. It had about 8 different ribbons that you to mark your place that you wanted to read from in the Bible. But it's a Catholic Bible. It's a Catholic Bible. Printed or published back in 1952. And it has a number of things in it at the beginning that are not the litany. Prayers, evening prayers, morning prayers. Several pages of that before you come. Offices of instruction. Sixth Sunday after the Trinity. All this kind of ritualistic stuff. And then they have the Psalms and they name it the Psalter. The Psalter. I heard it called that a long time ago. The form of consecration of a church or a chapel. So if you ever need that kind of information, the Catholic Bible has it in it. I don't know now why I bought this book. except it said it was a Bible, and we were probably talking about various, quote, religious groups. Then we have the book of Genesis, on through the Old Testament, and next comes the Apocrypha, which is a group of uninspired books as far as Protestants are concerned, but as far as the Catholics are concerned, I guess they consider them inspired. But their value rests as far as Protestants, I guess, are concerned, and as far as I'm concerned, it lies in the fact that they have some historical facts from the between the Testament period in it. I never have read it. You know, you have certain, I was telling Wayman this morning, he handed me some paperwork, and I said, well, you know, Wayman, I read some of this stuff you give me. Some of it's not worth spending your time, and I only spend so much time reading. So you read, you know, if you're going to read something, it's best to read the Bible than to read about the Bible, even though sometimes you need to read a little bit about the Bible, what people said about the Bible and the way people are thinking about the Bible. But anyway, that's the Apocrypha for what it's worth department. It does provide helpful historical data about this period of time. I assume that Josephus would have some writings in there also about this period of time, historian. Next followed the Maccabean period. 166 to 63 B.C. We're getting closer and closer to the time of Christ, when the B.C. will be changed to A.D. One of the leaders of the Maccabean was named Judas, and I've always heard him called Judas Maccabees. His nickname, according to the one writer, was Maccabeus the Hammer. The Hammer. He was one Jew, I think he was a Jew, that got up in arms and got a group behind him, a pretty large group behind him, to get the Seleucid people, get Epiphanes, Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes and his group out of Jerusalem. He regained Jerusalem during his period. He built a new altar. During that period of time, they refurbished the temple, and then they rededicated this to the Lord on, and get this, they had that, the exact date. They say December 14th, 164 B.C. And I can't remember my anniversary, you know, so they figure this out. Down to the day. I suppose, again, that it probably is there's a first and second Maccabees in here. I would assume probably they got that in there. And going by the Jewish months, they've been able to determine that was the month of December. But daily sacrifices renewed. In order to make note of this and to treat it for what the Jews thought it was, an event, Hanukkah began as a result of this. Hanukkah is the Feast of Lights, you know, and happens in December. Along about the time we're talking about Christmas, you know, we have the written in the articles in the paper for all the politically correct folks out there about the Hanukkah and other religious celebrations. But that's one that's going on and goes on in December. It's an annual Jewish festival that celebrates that particular event that we were talking about, getting back to worship at the altar in the temple and rededication and offering those daily sacrifices. Next came Roman domination. This was the kingdom number 4 of Daniel's interpretation. History proves that out. Their conquest of Palestine began in 63 B.C. Pompey leading the capture, and the Roman power dominated civilized world over the entire period that's covered by the New Testament. And let's go from the time period, not the time that Matthew wrote, but the time that the events of what Matthew wrote, from the time of the birth of Christ and before, for some years, 63 years, till after the book of Revelation. All that period of time, the Romans were in control. This helped immensely in the growth of the early church and in the timing of the coming of Christ. Now, under Roman control, similar to the way the Greeks control, is they allowed the people to continue to govern themselves up to a point. As long as there was no big commotion, as long as they remained loyal. You might recall in Acts chapter 19, the Apostle Paul was in Ephesus. As he preached there, and others were there preaching and teaching, the people got fairly well excited, you might say. And let's read from, verse 35, beginning of verse 35 of Acts chapter 19. This is in the town of the city of Ephesus. Paul, remember, was there about 3 years or so. So the silversmiths were getting concerned about the economy. They sold statues, evidently silver statues of Diana, the goddess that they worship. And I assume with Paul preaching and teaching that they should worship God and not idols, that people bought fewer and fewer of their wares. And so there was a recession, I guess you would say. There was a downturn in the economy, and they got concerned. So when the townspeople, when the town clerk, verse 35, had appeased the people, because they all came together, they got they got Alexander, they drew him out of the multitude, back in verse 33, the Jews put him forward, and then there was a big uproar. People were gathered around and shouting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," and the town clerk said, "Hold on. Ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how the city of Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana, and of the image which fell down from Jupiter? Seeing that these things cannot be spoken against, ye ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. For ye have brought hither these men, which are neither robbers of churches, nor yet blasphemers of your goddess. Wherefore, if Demetrius and the craftsmen which are with him have a matter against any man, the law is open." In other words, take me, sue him. "And there are deputies, let them implead one another." In other words, handle it between yourselves in court. "But if you inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. For we are in danger to be called in question for this day's uproar, there being no cause whereby we may give an account of this concourse." And when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the assembly. The danger was from the Roman Empire. The danger was from soldiers that likely were stationed somewhere nearby that could come and squash such an uprising, and also could change the nature of their control of that city. They may not even be allowed to continue to govern their own affairs. Okay, a general overview of life under the Roman rule of Palestine. If we listen to these, you'll see that many of them have a lot to do with the timing, the fullness of time that Paul speaks about in Galatians 4:4, when Jesus would come. Number one, the world was at peace at the time, as the time neared for the coming of the Messiah. The world was at peace, and that was important. And I don't even think I have it in my notes, but the Roman Empire conquered all that Mediterranean area. There were no boundary lines, so to speak, that you had to have a visa or a passport or something to go from country to country. And there were a system, there was a system of roads, a system of law. And so there were a lot of things that the people had in common. There was a common language that was used practically everywhere in the Roman Empire. There was widespread poverty in the Roman Empire. This was listed by someone as something that was the case during this time period. I assume they mentioned it because the gospel really wasn't presented to all the rich folks of the town first, probably. The one place in the New Testament says the common people heard him gladly. And he talked about the rich man and the poor man. It was always the rich man is going to have the hardest time of making it to heaven in Jesus' parables. And they had difficulty with their riches. And it's not that everybody would. But Jesus said that the tendency would be that way. There was widespread poverty. There was constant intrigue. I was intrigued with this. There was constant intrigue and suspicion and fear around the emperor's palace. Now, how would this affect the spread of Christianity? Well, it kept these governmental officials in Rome worried about their position. And worried who's going to be, in this position, that position, and not as concerned with what things were happening in individual provinces. Slavery was common in the empire, except in Palestine. That was a little, I'd never really thought about that. Remember Onesimus, I guess, is the one slave that we hear mentioned by name. He was a slave of Philemon. As I recall, Philemon lived in Colossae. Colossae is not in Palestine. Exactly where it is right now, I can't tell you, but it's not in Palestine. It was in other area that Paul went on his missionary journey. As far as beliefs in one God or more than one God, most of them believed in more than one God, polytheism. Outside of Jerusalem, outside of the Palestine area, for the most part, the Jews, of course, were believers in God. From time to time, they did not believe as much as they did at other times. There's very low morality. All the way from the king's palace, the king's court, down to the peasants. So here was the fullness of time, a time when Jesus could come in and the teachings of him, of his, would astonish the people, would amaze the people. Because even as he compared his teachings to the law of Moses, he says, the law says this about such, but I say unto you, if you remember from the Sermon on the Mount, so his was a different slant, a different take on the morality of people. And from that time on, we have seen, even though people may not give Jesus, may not give Christianity the credit, that the world has, when the world has been moral, and people who are moral can usually trace it back to the teachings of Christ. And from point of view of heaven, this time period, the history was moving forward purposefully, because God was in control, just as Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that, the power that you have, the kingdom that you have, are yours because God gave that to you. Daniel's interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream had been rapidly fulfilled in history. Maybe not rapidly as we look over a period of time, but as history goes. There was a time of anticipation, and as the first century neared, that anticipation was nearing its end, and the time of fulfillment of the Old Testament prophecies. And the prophecies of the prophet, the teachings, were drawing near and taking place. Galatians 4:4, by the way, says, "But when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus, and all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, unto Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn." Probably have one more study, thinking on the period between the Testaments. Probably look at the various groups of Jews that suddenly show up in the New Testament that we've never heard of before. Pharisees, Sadducees, Herods, Herodians. There's a group called the Zealots. Some think Simon. I think Simon is mentioned as a Zealot, one of the apostles. Don't know whether that's the exact meaning of the word there, I think some say, but then a group of that were a self-denial group, the group called the Essenes. They lived in an area where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. A later discovery of many of the books of the Old Testament, still in caves there, and still in pretty good order, that backed up the manuscripts, various manuscripts that they'd found elsewhere of the Old Testament. So that will conclude our lesson tonight. Appreciate your attention. And don't go anywhere telling them I preached out of the Catholic Bible tonight. I got my good old handy dandy King James, and this is just a prop. This is a prop. But anyway, appreciate your attention, and if there's anyone here tonight that needs our prayers on your behalf, would like to rededicate your life to Christ, if there's any need that you have, would you come as we stand, sing the song that Jerry selected.